Hey, it's Chaz Mostert here. If you're a club, state, or national level racer on the circuit, on dirt, or in speedway, or rallying, you can now tap into know-how of Walkinshaw Racing Services, and you don't need a supercar to get in the door. From bonnet to bumper, we can help you with your motorsport services and expertise that won't cost you an arm and a leg. Engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication, we do it all for everyone in the motorsport family tree. There's CNC machines, 3D printers, a chassis build shop and paint and engine shop that you can utilize. No job is too big or too small. If you're a clubby or national racer, a professional motor racing business, or anyone in between, make sure you tell Walkinshaw Racing Services what you need. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services@walkinshawracing.com.au.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Hello and welcome to the Castrol Motorsport News Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Van Leeuwen, and here's what's making news this week. We are closing in on the 2023 Supercars grid after Tim Slade was confirmed at Premier Racing. James Golding is now the overwhelming favourite to stay at Premier, leaving the Matt Stone Racing seat as perhaps the final vacancy on the grid. Declan Fraser and Jayden Ojeda are currently the favourites for that MSR seat. A seven-round calendar for a unified speed series, which includes the ARG events and the Motorsport Australia Championships, has been unveiled. Speed Series will start at Simmons Plains and take in Bathurst not once but twice, as well as Sydney Motorsport Park, Queensland Raceway, and two events in Victoria. One is a TBC and the other is Sandown in mid-September. The flow onto the Supercars calendar is that Supercars wanted that September date for the return of the Sandown 500. We'll have more on what that could mean later in the pod. Back to the Speed Series schedule, and at least one of those events will be part of the new WSC TCR World Tour, which will effectively replace WTCR next year. Australia will feature on the back end of the schedule, and I guess the Bathurst International would make a fair bit of sense. In other TCR Australia news, hybrid technology for a push-to-pass system will be trialled next season ahead of a full introduction in 2024. The Gold Coast will host Supercars for the first time since 2019 this weekend. It will be the first proper street circuit race outside of Townsville since the pandemic came along in early 2020. The Gold Coast 500 will also be the opening round of the S5000 Tasman Series, with the field now taking shape. Two-time Gold Star winner Joey Mawson returns to Team BRM, while recently crowned Australian Formula 3 champion Noah Sands will make his S5000 debut with Gary Rogers Motorsport. Ellie Morrow will join 88 Racing. Trans Am champion Nathan Hearn is heading to the United States. He will join Stevens Miller Racing for the final round of the National Trans Am Championship at the Circuit of the Americas on the first weekend of November. And the Bend Motorsport Park has appointed former Adelaide 500 GM Alastair McDonald as its new CEO. He will also oversee the Malala circuit as part of the role. Joining me this week to discuss all that and more is a teammate whose couch on the Gold Coast I'll be crashing on tonight, Stefan Bartholomeu. Stefan, on a scale of 1 to 500, how excited are you about my impending arrival?
Oh, it's not just me, Andrew. The whole of the Gold Coast is excited that you're coming. We got all of the rain out of the way in the last couple of days, so it should be perfect for your arrival.
I did see that the weather forecast looks pretty good, which seems really weird because I feel like we can't go motor racing without rain at the moment.
Yeah, if it had been last weekend, there wouldn't have been much racing, I don't reckon.
Yeah, well, anyway, look, I think it's like mid-20s, sunny. That's exactly what we want from the Gold Coast. It should be pretty fun. Well, let's get into some of the news that's kicking around this week, and let's start with some Speed Series action. Now, this is still hard to explain, but there has been some unification between Australian Racing Group and Motorsport Australia, all of what, for lack of a better term, I'll call the second-tier events from ARG and Motorsport Australia will fall under the Speed Series banner next year. So that includes ARG events like Race Tasmania, the Bathurst 6-Hour and the Bathurst International, and all of the Motorsport Australia Championship events, or Shannon's events, as we've sort of been calling them for many, many years. Stefan, let's start with that. It's always been a little confusing having ARG and then Motorsport Australia Championships and then this Speed Series thing that came along to try and sort of tie them under one umbrella for the broadcast deal with Stan Sport. Do you think that actually just plonking it all under the Speed Series banner for everything will help with a bit of identity for these events?
Yeah, I think that's a good thing. Like you were saying, that the Speed Series has kind of been a subset of the Shannon's Motorsport Australia Championships at some rounds, and then so you've got multiple levels of branding before you actually get to explain what each category is called, and then there's all these other names to take in as well. So it's one of those things though. Like Motorsport Australia is still going to run a bunch of events away from those seven speed series rounds under their own banner for other categories. So it's sort of not like it's really all unified, but certainly in the speed series sense, it's been simplified in that if it's on Stan, it's called the speed series.
Yeah, it is. And then there's these other events that show up on 7 Plus or whatever that arrangement. I think it's like, you know, Motorsport Australia Lite or Speed Series Lite or something of these events that aren't quite full Speed Series rounds with all of the ARG. It is incredibly difficult to wrap your head around. So hopefully this does help in some sort of way. I'll quickly run through the calendar itself. We have Race Tasmania on the last weekend in February at Simmons Plains. The Bathurst 6 Hour at Easter. That's the week after the Grand Prix. There's the TBC round in Victoria on the last weekend in May. Sydney Motorsport Park on June 23 to 25. Queensland Raceway on August 11 to 13. Sandown on the middle weekend in September. And the Bathurst International on November 10 to 12. Now, there are no categories attached to those dates just yet, but I reckon you could learn a lot about how the TCR Australia and Trans Am schedules are going to look right there. S5000 is the interesting one because my understanding is that the plan is still to incorporate the Gold Star and the Tasman series into one instead of having the sort of weird split Gold Star and New Zealand less Tasman series seasons like we do now, and with the target of sort of roughly six races, but a focus on the bigger events. So, you know, the likes of the Darwin Triple Crown, the Gold Coast 500, the Adelaide 500, which are all on the S5000 schedule in the wider sense this year. They're the sort of events they'll be looking at. So I'm not sure how many of the Speed Series rounds will feature S5000. But the really interesting thing from that calendar is that Sandown date. Now, we know Supercars wants to bring the Sandown 500 back, the proper Sandown 500 with two drivers and a 500K Enduro. We know it's very, very likely to happen. It's expected to be on the calendar when it does drop, whenever that actually is. But that's the date that Supercars really wants for it. I mean, that's the traditional pre-Bathurst date, is the middle weekend in September. And I don't think ARG wants to give it up. And I think what the fact that they've now, you know, officially put out their calendar with that date is a pretty clear sign that they are going to keep that date. So what I'm hearing is that we could actually end up seeing a two-driver Sandown 500 in August on the Supercar schedule before a single driver round in either New Zealand or at the Bend, depending on what happens with the New Zealand round, and then going back to two-driver format for the Bathurst 1000. Stefan, it kind of doesn't feel right to do it that way, but I guess it doesn't really matter if we need to go two-driver, single-driver, two-driver, right?
Yeah, I mean, it does seem slightly odd, and maybe it's a bit off from a marketing point of view, but I don't think it really matters. Like, the Bathurst prep for the teams is huge regardless of what's before it. And when you look back, like, it's not unprecedented if this is what happens. Like, back in 2000 and 2001, when it was the Queensland 500 and Bathurst 1000, Supercars did schedule a sprint round between the two Enduros in both of those years. So it's happened before. And probably one thing that this would do is actually get that Sandown fixture out of that AFL finals sort of period in Melbourne. So that could be a benefit for it.
Yeah, that's true. And it'll never be as weird as having the Sandown 500 after the Bathurst like 1000, which we had. Was it 2019 that it was that way around?
Yeah, when Scotty sealed the championship there. So that was an odd weekend for a lot of reasons.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot going on that weekend. That's right. Memories. 2019, what a year that it was. Just a bit more on the Supercars calendar. I think an announcement is reasonably imminent. You know, there was talk about it being in the lead up to the Gold Coast, but we'll see what happens there. From what I'm hearing, it will be Newcastle, Albert Park, Perth, Tasmania. You know, Simmons Plains seems likely to fall into the old Winton date in May. Winton won't be on the calendar. Then off to Darwin, Townsville, Sydney Motorsport Park. And then that Sandown 500, if it happens in August, as is sort of being touted at the moment. The TBC will be in there somewhere before the Bathurst 1000, then the Gold Coast 500 and the Adelaide 500. Adelaide's likely to be in late November rather than early December like it is this year. The big talking point is the TBC. Stefan, everyone seems to be taking bets on whether we'll head to New Zealand or Tail and Bend. I think that Hampton Downs really is the only New Zealand option that's a realistic one. It depends on getting some funding out of Auckland Unlimited or getting some funding from somewhere, whether it's federal funding to keep that event going, even though it's maybe not in Auckland itself. Stefan, where's your money going if you were going to bet on whether we go to New Zealand or the Bend?
Oh, you're the gambler here, Andrew, so I'll leave all betting to you. But, I mean, obviously the priority for supercars is New Zealand. Like, the fact it looks like they're going to announce this calendar with a TBC on it shows that they're far from giving up on making that work. Like, it just makes so much sense to do Hampton Downs. So you'd like to think it's just a matter of, as you sort of say there, like working out who's got to pay for what in terms of Auckland Unlimited and then the federal government over there and all that. So I still hope that'll be the outcome. But by the same token, it seems a shame to leave this many permanent circuits in Australia off the calendar. Like, when you look at the Bend, Winton, Queensland Raceway, you know, Phillip Island, like, that's the best joint we've got. And to have that many that aren't on there is a shame.
Yeah, it does just seem like such a brief calendar. And I mean, if we're talking about adding, you know, up to 3 Formula One races at some point in the future, like, there obviously needs to be a reform in the expectation of the calendar and not just having satisfying the broadcast agreement as the absolute kind of, well, that's what we're going to do and that's what we're going to work towards. Because like you say, there's just so many good tracks that are missing out, and it does, it does always sort of feel a little bit weird. Let's just go back to TCR Australia for a second. There was a bit of news that came out on the weekend regarding this TCR World Tour, which will visit Australia, and this move with this push-to-pass system. So basically, push-to-pass will be trialled in 2023 before a full introduction in 2024. How it operates is using a hybrid system that fits to the current engine and transmission package and just provides that extra power to use for passing. Stefan, I guess given that TCR is so heavily manufacturer focused, this makes some sense based on, you know, general motoring trends.
Oh, yes and no. Like, I think we're going to have to wait and see on this. Like, my understanding is that the hybrid stuff was actually meant to be introduced in 2023, and this is more of an acknowledgement of pushing it all back until 2024. Like, it does have some marketing benefit, obviously, but at the end of the day, it's going to add cost. Like, the British Touring Car Championship, which runs its own formula, they're not TCR cars, but they introduced their own plug-in hybrid this year, which is a Cosworth product, and they based the tender for that on it costing £20,000 per car per season. So, like, that might be cheap in hybrid motorsport world, but I'm not sure if many TCR Australia budgets can wear the thick end of a 40 grand Aussie tax at this point.
Yeah, no, that's very, very true. And that's a pretty similar system, I think, in terms of, like, it's being used as a push-to-pass system, right?
Oh, I would think that the cost of it and all that would be, pretty much line ball.
Yeah, no, it's it's interesting. I mean, it just makes me think back to the fact that when, you know, towards the end of 2020, when we were sort of presented with here's what Gen 3 is, it was actually billed as being a hybrid ready car. There was going to be space, it's funny, there was going to be space at the front of the car for a hybrid system to go in. It turns out there's not much space to do anything at the front of a Gen 3 car, but that was, there was going to be all this stuff. And the idea was to have either cars, you know, maybe traversing pit lane, just using electric power or a push-to-pass system or something like that. I think that the transmission can actually do it, can't it? I think the supercar's transmission is actually capable of having a hybrid unit fitted to it.
Yeah,
to do something similar to this.
I think's been the case since the X-Track came in.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's a so it is. It seems to have become, this push-to-pass thing has become kind of the ultimate, like, way to check off your hybrid, your green credentials, to say, yeah, we have a hybrid. We are running, you know, a hybrid system of some kind, without it actually fully impacting the sort of visceral experience of the cars going around. So yeah, it's interesting.
With respect, I don't know if TCR is high on the visceral experience when it comes to noise at the moment. So they might not lose much there.
That was great use of with respect before delivering a fairly hammer blow on. It's always the start of the TCR races where you're like, yeah, this isn't quite the start of a supercars race. The thunder isn't quite there. But anyway. Stefan, as I mentioned earlier in the pod, the Gold Coast is back this weekend. I have to say, I'm pretty excited. I found myself transfixed by video clips of on the socials of cars bouncing over those curbs at the beach chicane over there. This is kind of the first real proper street circuit that we've raced on since Adelaide 2020, apart from the 3 trips to Townsville or the 10 trips to Townsville. I've lost track of what's happened in the last couple of years, but obviously we had Albert Park this year as well, but it's not so much of a street track. This is about as gnarly as a street track gets. We've got Supercar. S5000 is going to be pretty cool to watch there this weekend, I think. I know I'm sometimes critical of that series, but I think it's going to be a pretty cool spectacle watching those things go around that track. So I'm pretty excited. I can't wait to see it all unfold. Surely you're pretty keen on having a bit of racing going on in your own backyard as well, Stefan.
Yeah, I think spectacle's a good word for the whole thing. Like supercars in particular look awesome on that track, as you say, bouncing over the curbs. And it is amazing that we've had an Adelaide 500 more recently than we've had a Gold Coast round, considering the journey that event's been through in the last couple of years. So yeah, it'd be just great to see it fire back up. And supercars have put a lot of effort into all the external stuff around the racing to try to make it as much of a party as possible, and hopefully it's a big event for them.
Well, one person who is very excited to get to the Gold Coast this weekend is David Reynolds. I grabbed him for a chat about the challenge of Return to Service Paradise, and let's have a listen. Yeah, so have you recovered from the disappointment of that incredibly long Bathurst 1000 that you had a couple of weeks ago?
Yes, I sort of have. It's pretty disappointing. But I get over disappointment pretty fast. When you're in motor racing, you have to get over disappointment fast. Otherwise, it's a depressing career, I reckon. So,
Is it easier when it just goes that badly to get over, as opposed to if you'd put a double stint in and then the thing had ended up hanging out of the wall or something like that?
Yeah, I don't know. I suppose I've had that feeling. I suppose in 18 when we led pretty much the whole race, and then I suppose that's way more disappointing than to be out at 5. You don't know how good you were going or how good it could have been. Obviously in 18 we did. I suppose that was our race to lose. We lost it. So that's a way more disappointing sort of ending, I suppose. So, yeah, but it's kind of sucked. You just got caught up in that incident. And, there was nothing he could have done about it. And, the car was destroyed. And, that was it. I just went, oh, that was a shit day.
Yeah. How's the repair gone? I saw you posted something on socials the other day with a fair bit of broken bits next door. Was it a big job to get it straightened out for this weekend?
There was a bit of damage, front rail, rear rail was bent, so they had to fix all that. But from all accounts, it was probably the best, smoothest, most calmest the boys have ever been in any repair job, or even in between of all the rounds with all the damage and stuff. So apparently that was handled like pros.
Well, it's good that they're in that frame of mind when we're heading to what can be another pretty bruising event on the Gold Coast. Oh, we haven't done a lot of street circuit racing in the past few years. We've had a few outings in Townsville, but that's kind of it. And the Gold Coast is about as gnarly as a street circuit gets. What do you reckon those first few laps in practice are going to be like? A little bit eye-opening when you go out there?
Oh, it's always eye-opening when you go there. No matter how many times you've been there, it's always just balls to the wall, and your confidence starts in a tiny little circle, and then you grow as the practice moves on. You start putting new tyres on, and then you've got to start pushing, and your confidence goes back again. And I love that place. There's nothing better, absolutely nothing better. It's so much fun. That turn 1-2 complex, that's kind of the most kind of gnarliest, I suppose. Even though it doesn't look that bad, but just through turn 1-2, you get on the throttle trying to turn the car with a wall directly in front of you, and you're just judging whether you hit it or not every lap. It's full on. And then the back chicane obviously is just super fast, and the car floats around. But it's not too bad as far as a driver goes. And then the next section, it's all just concrete fences, and you're just trying to use as much road as you can without hitting the fence. So yeah, it's the best track. I love it.
What do you think it's going to be like doing races that long as a solo driver? Like, this is kind of uncharted territory in terms of what you guys are going to go through in the car. You're used to doing 250K races in Adelaide, but this is bouncing over those curves for that long. That's going to be a physical test, right?
Yeah, it's going to be tough for us. You know, we haven't done a lot of long races, and you know, I didn't even do Bathurst, so I'm going to be undone a little bit. But yeah, I don't agree with 250K race. They could probably get the exact same result with 200K races.
Yeah.
There's probably no point in making us struggle through that extra 50Ks, especially if it's a, you know, it could be really good, but you know, most of the time we do this, it's sort of, you know, there's not a lot to gain by that extra 50K, but yeah, it is what it is. I'm dreading that. I'm sort of dreading those last 50Ks because I'm actually dreading it at all, to be fair, because it's a tough track, and you know, regardless if you do 100Ks or 200Ks or 300Ks, it's tough.
Well, it might be tough on the body, but it's still going to be better than watching 300K races around Sydney Motorsport Park like we did earlier this year. But anyway, that was
very boring, wasn't it?
That's a whole other topic. Given there was a fair bit of damage that came out of Bathurst, do you think up and down the field there might be, you know, a bit of calm in the ranks this weekend, or are we still going to see those walls claim a few victims?
There's definitely going to be some victims. There's motor racing, and we've got egos, and we want to be fast and whatnot. So, you know, there's always going to be dramas going on.
It can be a little hard to read where the Grove Racing cars kind of stack up pace-wise each weekend, or where they're going to stack up. How are you expecting them to work around that circuit? I mean, I guess it is the circuit at least where, you know, a bit of driver hustle can make a little bit of difference.
A little bit, yeah. But, yeah, you are right. It's kind of hard to predict how we're going to go. You know, at the start of the year, we always like, you know, if we ended up in the top eight, that'd be a good job. And we ended up, you know, on the podium challenging for wins. So, and then we go to tracks like, yeah, we're going to go really well here. We should be in the top, you know, top three easy. And then we're like fifth and sixth. So, you know, it's really hard to predict how we're going to go. But our car seems to like the more grip we have, so like the super soft tyres it likes, the soft tyres it can like, the hard tyre not so much. So, you know, it's we're going there soft tyre around. You know, the track surface is pretty average though, so you got to factor into that. So, dude, I honestly don't know. It could be really good. It could be, you know, who knows?
Yeah,
I always like to be positive, saying, you know, we've definitely got a chance. You know, we're going to end up on the podium and whatnot, but you just never know.
Yeah, it has been a bit that way this year for you guys. How's the mood in the team heading into the Gen 3 era? I mean, the idea of the new rules is that the emphasis will be on drivers and engineers. Is there a sense that, you know, the pieces are in place for Grove Racing to make some steps forward in terms of the pecking order with these new cars?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I suppose internally we talk about it, like, you know, I suppose one of our biggest weaknesses this year has been our engine, I suppose.
Yep.
And, you know, everyone should have similar power next year, so that should bring us, you know, closer up the field. And obviously the build quality of our car is kind of unknown and so forth. So, you know, hopefully we can actually benefit from all the, I suppose, leveling out of everything. So, but, you know, allegedly it's going to be the same, but who really knows anymore? Like, you know, I've been part of this sport a long time, and you know, all the background stuff, the political stuff that happens in the background, I don't understand it, but, you know, people just wheel their wheelbarrow, I suppose, to try and make their cars faster than everyone else's to win races. But, yeah, I don't know anymore. So I'd like to think it's going to be similar, but who knows?
I will be very surprised if there's not, you know, with these sealed engines and that sort of stuff, there's always someone gets the good motor and someone doesn't. And everyone's got their theories about what they've got. So I'm not sure.
Always. Like, even in go-karts, like, everyone buys the same engine, and then even the standard engine out of the box, they're all different. Yep. So who knows?
Yeah, it will be interesting. Do you think we're going to see any real show? I mean, again, you talked about the fact you've been involved in this sport for a long time. It feels like we often have these rule changes and we might get a short-term shake-up, but then everything falls back to the natural order. Do you think Gen 3 is actually going to provide, you know, an opportunity for teams, or do we end up with the cream rising back to the top at some point?
Yeah, definitely. I suppose when we went to the Car of the Future, there was a lot of different winners and a lot of different fast teams here and there, and you know, but over time, the good teams still became the good teams. You know, I think they employ all the smart people, and you know, their ways about they go managing people and making speed, and their methodology is, you know, they work it out, I suppose, better than everyone. It just takes time, but I still assume the big teams will be the big teams.
Yeah,
and you know, I suppose being from a, you know, a non-manufacturing based team, so you know, the manufacturer teams are 888 and DJR. You know, they've been running the cars for the past year and a half. They arguably they do have a leg up, knowing just running the cars, and no other team has. So even though they do get the drivers here and there, but you know, that's not much benefit to us as far as getting all the data and running it. You know, trying to understand it, I don't. You know, those guys definitely do have an advantage or some advantage.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that's that has to be the case. I mean, you know, how weird is it to think that we've only got two race meetings left with this generation of car? By the way, I mean, before we move on to something that's so different and you know as big a change as we've seen in a long time. Given how long you have been racing these cars, it must be weird to think, wow, we've got the Gold Coast and Adelaide, and then. That's it for this generation of car.
Yeah, I know it's bloody bizarre when you think about it. I don't know if I'm going to miss it, or it depends on what happens in the Gen 3, like what kind of car that is to drive and race it and race other people with. But you know, I really love supercar at the end of this generation. Like you know, from when I started back in, I suppose the what do you call them, Gen 1?
Yeah.
The Gen 1 car, like you know, they were very hard to drive, very hard to set up. Very little aero, always on the hard tyre. And I suppose over this generation, we've got heaps more aero, easier to drive, three iterations of tyre. So, yeah, there's been a lot of change, I suppose, in the last 10 years. But I kind of have loved the whole evolution. Like when I first joined, it was so hard to drive. And, like, it did my head in coming from Porsches that had heaps of grip and then going to supercars that had no grip. And learning how to drive and maximize that thing took years. You know, anyone that was any good at driving always started at the back of the field, and they worked their way up from learning the skill of driving the supercar.
Yeah.
But now it's like, you know, they're pretty easy to drive, and all the cars are quite similar. They got heaps of aero and different tires and stuff. You know, a young kid coming from any category can jump in and do a relatively competitive lap time, where when I grew up, that didn't happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of young guys doing relatively good lap times, Matty Payne, pretty impressive at Bathurst alongside Lee Holdsworth. You know,
he was really good.
Held his own. Is that exciting? Was the team excited to see the way that he performed, given the fact that, you know, he's locked in to make that big step up to be your teammate next year?
Yeah, Matty did an exceptional job. And, you know, we were all quite a little bit concerned about how he would go going in, but you know, he did an absolutely stellar job, and I couldn't believe it. It was very impressive. He held his own, didn't make any mistakes. He was, you know, fast enough and did what he had to do. It was almost like the perfect co-driver.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think he sort of showed that, you know, he can have that mistake-free weekend that you need to put together if you're going to be a main game driver.
100%. Yeah, it was really good to see. So, you know, next year he's got, you know, I suppose we're both going to have a lot to learn the new car, and, you know, he's going to have to learn the sport a bit and all the tracks and stuff, where I'm kind of just trying to learn the car, which arguably we're going to be on a similar playing field. So, yeah, it's going to be cool to have him along.
Stefan, your tips for the weekend. Surely Shane Van Gisbergen is going to want to seal the title with a race win. Is he going to be pretty hard to beat?
Yeah, definitely. And aside from that, it's sort of just usual suspects, right? Like Chaz, Cam, probably DJ, DJR, albeit with a bit of a question mark after Bathurst. I mean, like you hear David Reynolds talk there, like he's got no idea how he's going to go, and he's in his team. Yep. So, like, it's really hard for us to pick the 25-car field. But I think one guy who has got a really tough assignment is Brock Feeney, because he's the only one in the whole field that hasn't done a Supercars Championship race there before, because of course in 2019 it was a co-driver round. It was an enduro, so all those guys like Will Brown and Thomas Randall, and I think Brody Kostecki was in the family wildcard, but a lot of those guys got those miles back then. that, yeah, probably gives him a little leg up for on Brock for this weekend. Like he did, Brock did race a Mark Carr in Australian GT there at that weekend, so he has a bit of track knowledge, yep. But it'll be interesting to see how big a challenge it is for him this weekend.
All right, let's take a look at what's happening around the world. Max Verstappen overcame a botched pit stop at the Circuit of the Americas to run down Lewis Hamilton to win the US Grand Prix. The win puts Max level with Michael Schumacher and Sebastian Vettel on 13 wins for a single season and sealed the constructors' title for Red Bull Racing. Max dedicated the victory to Red Bull founder Dietrich Mateschitz, who died on Saturday. Charles Leclerc finished third, while Daniel Ricciardo struggled to a lowly 16th. Francesco Bagnaia has one hand on the MotoGP title after overcoming fellow Ducati rider Enea Bastianini to win the Malaysian Grand Prix. Fabio Quartararo finished third to keep his slim title hopes just alive. He'll head to the finale in Valencia, 23 points behind Bagnaia with 25 points on offer. Jack Miller finished sixth and Remy Gardner 18th. Sebastian Ogier took a first WRC win of the season at Rally Spain, helping Toyota secure the 2022 manufacturer's title. And Kyle Larson won the NASCAR Cup Series race at Homestead, while Denny Hamlin, Ryan Blaney, Christopher Bell, and Chase Briscoe are all in danger of being knocked out of the playoffs at Martinsville next weekend. Okay, it's one of my favorite times of the week, Stefan, where we do some window shopping and see what grabbed our eye on my105.com. Now, Stefan, as you know, I've been dipping my toe into the dirt track world recently, and I think I'm ready to ramp things up. So this week I'm daydreaming about a Rocket Late model that's for sale in South Australia. It's actually a complete team sellout, which is a bit of a speedway thing, I think. So it's not just the car, but all the other bits and pieces you need as well. I do get a bit excited by an ugly racing car, although I do draw the line at the Gen 2 Mustang. And these late models are pretty gnarly looking. 800 horsepower too, which seems like it would be a fair bit of fun based on the fun I have with 30 horsepower in the back of a go-kart. All I need, Stefan, is for you to loan me $60,000. And by loan, I mean give and never expect to see again. So if we can sort that out, I'm raring to go.
That is a lot of horsepower for 60 grand.
Yep.
At least we'd have that. But I don't know. You wanted to stay at my house. You're trying to leech 60 grand off me. This is all a bit much for me this week, which is a shame because I'd actually done my 105 shopping with you in mind.
I'd
found you this really nice 1991 Toyota Celica GT4. And not only does this thing have the Castrol livery that the one you picked out a couple of weeks ago has, but according to the listing, this is one of a handful of lightweight build competition Celicas imported into Australia. So it looks mint, and I can just only imagine the sort of head wobble you'd have going on wearing your Castrol helmet driving this thing around. It'd be amazing.
That does sound like a lot of fun. That would be an ST185 as well, which is the absolute king of Celicas.
And
best of the lot. Last of the pop-up headlights, delicious.
As a bonus, the car is based in Geelong, so you could do your victory lap at Cadinia Park when you're picking the thing up.
I'm not sure the groundkeeper would be too happy with cutting some four-wheeled donuts out in the middle of Cadinia Park. But, yeah, that does sound like a lot of fun. Thank you for that. You know what? That means more to me than the 60 grand because you really put some thought into it. So thank you, Stefan. I do very much appreciate that. Okay, Castrol mailbag time. Nick Keast asked that now supercars teams don't actually own the category, could we see some sort of promotion relegation model introduced? If you underperform for a couple of years, you go down to Super 2 and the winner of Super 2 gets a bump up to the main game. It would spice up the stale back end of the field, says Nick. Well, tell you what, Nick, I agree. Like, Stefan, you know that I'm a big round ball football fan, so I love the idea of promotion relegation. That's right up my alley. Nothing creates interest up and down the standings like the danger of getting bumped out if you don't get on with it. So I think it's a fantastic idea. How it would ever be executed, I have no idea, but maybe you've worked that out, Stefan.
Yeah, well, I mean, to start with, to actually address the question, like, the teams still wield a lot of power behind closed doors in this sport at the moment. So I don't think it's any more chance of getting out now really than it was. But I feel like there is some merit in it. And this question does come off the back of Peter Adderton speaking on the pod last week about this renter car model that some teams are running. And, yeah, I think it would be great to find a way of shaking that up. I don't think that direct relegation promotion thing works so well here. Like, you know, the way Super 2 is at the moment, Triple Eight would be given another TRC each year for winning Super 2. So slowly over time, they'd just eat up the whole field. But If you look at, say, what NASCAR does with its charter system, which is a similar sort of concept, there's a mechanism in there where if a car is in the bottom three among the 36 charters in the owner points for 3 years running, NASCAR has the right to remove that charter. So if you had that in supercars, you know, it might actually sort of err teams towards signing the driver with the most talent rather than the biggest checkbook.
That would be remarkable. That's a good idea. You cracked it. You found a way for it to work, except for the fact that the teams would never vote for it, and they still need to, as we are finding out through this boost thing slash other matters like trying to maybe have tweaked a team's championship points and that. You still need all the teams on side, and that's would be a pretty hard sell, I think. But good work. Good work for thinking out of the box, and it's a very good question. Alrighty, let's hand out some Castrol Stars of the Week. I'm going with Warren Luff this week for my Castrol Star. He sealed the Australian Off-Road Championship title in the production four-wheel drive class, full walk and short performance in Kalgoorlie on the weekend. That's a pretty decent effort for what is his first foray into off-road racing, although we know Warren is a pretty versatile sort of bloke, but he's just proven it again there. So he's getting my Castrol Star. Stephen, who gets your Castrol Star this week?
My Castrol Star of the Week is Fernando Alonso, because I feel like he deserves something after the US Grand Prix. Like, for anyone who didn't see it, and I assume you did, Andrew, he had one of the biggest crashes of the year in that race, thanks to some dodgy driving from Lance Stroll, but he still finished seventh somehow. It was unbelievable that car could continue. But then he was given this post-race time penalty because the right-hand mirror had been loose after the accident. Like, he didn't get a meatball flag or anything, but Haas protested saying the team was running an unsafe car and he got a time penalty. Like, as Fernando himself would say, that's a yoke.
Yep, that is. Well, I'm sure this will make it all better, and I think he'll really appreciate that.
Well, he is a good Castrol driver and a friend of our friend Tommy Randall. So
that's right.
Yeah, he'd love it.
That's right. Well, we'll make sure Tommy passes that on to him, and I'm sure he'll be very, very excited. Well, that's it for this week. Remember to like, subscribe, and review our work wherever you listen to your podcast, and we'll be back next week with more Castrol Motorsport news.
Hey, it's Chaz Mostert here. If you're a club, state, or national level racer on the circuit, on dirt, or in speedway, or rallying, you can now tap into know-how of Walkinshaw Racing Services, and you don't need a supercar to get in the door. From bonnet to bumper, we can help you with your motorsport services and expertise that won't cost you an arm and a leg. Engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication, we do it all for everyone in the motorsport family tree. There's CNC machines, 3D printers, a chassis build shop, and paint and engine shop that you can utilize. No job is too big or too small. If you're a clubby or national racer, a professional motor racing business, or anyone in between, make sure you tell Walkinshaw Racing Services what you need. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services@walkinshawracing.com.au.